You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 27th week of the year, from July 1st to July 7th, covering Leviticus 11:9 to Leviticus 13:45. So we're continuing in the section of Leviticus that deals with the kosher dietary laws, which are spelled out in Leviticus. And Leviticus 11:9 says, "This may you eat from everything that is in the water, everything that has fins and scales in the water, in the seas and in the streams, those you may eat." So specifically, you can, if you're keeping kosher, you can eat a fish that has fins and scales. So you can't eat shellfish, you can't eat a shark, for example, because it doesn't have scales. You can't eat an eel because it doesn't have fins, and so forth. Leviticus has the foundation of kosher dietary laws, and laws are very complex and difficult to understand, and some of them are really impossible to understand. Like, why is it that a fish with scales is holier than a fish without scales? I don't know. Nobody really knows. But there's a spiritual concept that's helpful to understand. It's very simple, and this is true of a lot of religions, not just Judaism, that dietary discipline is important in maintaining spiritual discipline. So one interpretation is that God wants us to be careful about what we consume, what goes into ourselves. We have to watch what we put into ourselves. And because one of the issues we face in life is that eating is so basic that we can do it without thinking. And this can be true for other areas of life. We go on autopilot and plow through our day without being aware of what's going on, who we are, how we affect others, or what kind of ideas we're taking into ourselves. And the one concept of kosher dietary laws is, if you're careful about what you put into your mouth in terms of food, you might be careful about what you put into your head in terms of thinking, and also be careful about what comes out of your mouth. What are you saying? Like, what goes in, what goes out, that kind of thing. And so this verse could be a reminder for us that we should be careful about the kind of thinking we're consuming, what kind of attitudes and opinions. Are we surrounding ourselves with toxic, negative people, and we then risk absorbing their thinking? And this kosher dietary rule, which seems abstract and technical, could be seen as a spiritual reminder. Now we're going to change subjects in Leviticus. Leviticus 12:1 and 12:2 says, "God spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel, saying, when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male, she shall be contaminated for a 7-day period.'" One of the commentators, Rav Hirsch, translates "conceives" as "grows the seed of a human." And this reflects partly, I think, an idea that the process of conception used to be viewed as more of almost like a plant growing inside a vessel. And there is that aspect of it in reality still. But I think it was much more viewed as a growth process, like a miniature human would sort of grow into a full-size human in the womb. But I think spiritually we can take this verse to remind ourselves that we all started out in life like seeds. We grew and took form for better or worse. And in a lot of our cases, it was for worse. And, you know, if you do anything in any gardening or farming, you know, if you don't treat a plant well, it'll grow in a strange, unhealthy way. and it may not grow to its full potential, or it may grow into an odd shape, may not bear fruit in that case, kind of thing. And in our cases, the way we were grown was not always ideal. And one of the big challenges in recovery is coming to terms with the directions our lives have taken, often branching away from our dreams like an unruly vine. We wanted to be one place, but we grew into something else. We grew into a different direction. And sometimes it's our own fault, and sometimes it's, you know, early life experiences that we couldn't avoid that made us grow like malformed plants. And so part of the challenge in thinking about this and this verse is to forgive our parents for being bad farmers, so to speak. And if they accidentally let us grow the wrong way, we need to forgive them. And if they did it deliberately or negligently, we should probably forgive them for that too. And why should we do that? Because it helps us. Then, when we start anew in recovery, we can again be like seeds waiting to be cultivated. We can grow wild like a weed, or we can be nurtured, or nurture ourselves to grow spiritually. So, coming back to this verse, when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male, she shall be contaminated for a 7-day period, as during the days of her separation infirmity shall she be contaminated. Now, I know that this verse, taken literally, tends to upset modern thinkers and feminists, and I understand why, but I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that this verse is sometimes misinterpreted. The word contaminated does not have to be read as impure or bad. And in fact, I think it's an example of an inadequate translation of a Hebrew word. The Hebrew word is tuma, which describes a state of spiritual impurity, meaning that that giving birth or a woman's body is not impure or bad. It's that the process of having a baby, of conceiving a baby and having a baby, creates a spiritual transformation in the woman, which is so powerful that it changes her. And I think if you talk to women who've had a child, they might agree that the experience changed them in some way, and it might even change their spiritual outlook. And that by being basically God's partner in the creation of a new human being, this puts a woman on a level that other people cannot understand, and it's so powerful that it's almost like dangerous to come near. So that's, I think, the idea of contamination and separation, that the woman is in a spiritual zone that is so strong that it's almost like dangerous to other people. So, you know, and I think for our purposes, if you could sort of extend the metaphor a little bit, like recovery can be like a rebirth process. Recovery is, if it goes well, is sort of like a new individual's being born. This new individual has conscious contact with God, and like the childbirth experience, the release of spiritual energy can be immense, almost dangerous, profound. It can profoundly change us. And I think where we see this is that if we go through this process, we're really not the same person we were before. Meaning, if you get sober and you're working a good program, and then you find yourself back with your old friends who are still using, they probably seem a little different to you, and you probably seem different to them because you've changed. You've acquired a different spiritual energy. So maybe you need to separate yourself, like the woman who's just given birth, because you've been reborn yourself. You need to be separated. So going from one controversial topic to another, Leviticus 12:3 talks about the obligation of circumcision, also known as bris milah, ritual circumcision of Jewish males at the age of 8 days. Leviticus 12:3 says, on the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. And this is the sign, the circumcision is a sign of the covenant between God and Abraham, that God will allow Abraham to be in the promised land. And just to connect this to sobriety, there's an interpretation of circumcision that it is should be compared to a tithe, in the same way that when a farmer harvests a crop, the farmer needs to tithe, to donate a portion of that crop to the temple and to the priests. And later on in history, people will give portions of their crops to the church. It's the same idea. With circumcision, it's like you're taking a piece of an organ, of a bodily organ, that is capable of being used for holiness and healthy living, but can also be misused for self-indulgence and pleasure, and worse, self-indulgent pleasure seeking, and worse. And you give part of that organ back to God, so to speak. We're signifying that our pursuit of personal pleasure should have some limits. We're not endlessly entitled to self-seeking. So this is a way to understand circumcision in spiritual terms. Obviously a controversial topic, but just looking, again, trying to find the spiritual meaning for recovery in a verse that talks about a specific ritual. Why 8 days? There are many answers to this question, but in terms of recovery, can be a reminder that sobriety is a day-at-a-time deal. We measure recovery in days, weeks, months. Do you remember what it was like to have 8 days sober? I do. Bris Mila is a ritual performed after birth, and so we mark time in the same way in recovery. It's a ritual of our rebirth, so to speak, as sober people. Now Leviticus moves on to another topic that is fascinating and also has been subject to misinterpretation over the years. Genesis 13:1 to 13:3 says, it's a relatively long verse, says, God spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, if a person will have on the skin of his flesh a se'is, or a sapachas, or a becheras, and it will become a tsaras affliction on the skin of his flesh, he shall be brought to Aaron the priest, or to one of his sons, the Kohanim. The priest shall look at the affliction on the skin of his flesh. If the hair in the affliction has changed to white, and the affliction's appearance is deeper than the skin of the flesh, it is a tsaras affliction. The priest shall declare him contaminated. Okay, there's a lot in there, and just to basically what it's saying is that there was a disease that the Israelites got in the wilderness on the skin, and it's been translated in some versions of the Bible as leprosy. This is generally considered to be incorrect. They were not describing leprosy. Nobody really knows what these words like se'es or sapachas or becheres, what these actually mean anymore. They're like ancient Hebrew words that have become unknown to us, but people, contextually, it's understood to be a skin disease where the skin turned white. But it's really not supposed to be looked at as leprosy, and I won't get into it right now. There's a lot of technical interpretations that explain why this disease was not leprosy, because, for example, leprosy is highly contagious, and it says specifically here that this disease is not physically contagious. Tsaras, which is what this disease is called in the Torah, is understood to be a disease caused by spiritual imbalance. If a person committed slander, made false oaths, acted selfishly, stole something, or engaged in sexual improprieties or overly prideful, they would become afflicted with this physical skin disease. That's why they go to see the priest, not a doctor. Only a priest can cure this disease. Now, if you're an addict and you read about this, you think, oh, slander, false oaths, acting selfishly, stealing, sexual impropriety. Wow, sounds like my life, right? You know, it's really describing the alcoholic and addictive lifestyle. You know, and you know what happened to us? We got sick. Maybe we didn't get a skin disease, but most of us got sick physically, and usually we got sick spiritually. And ultimately, these were spiritual illnesses. You know, I mean, I was just listening the other day to a gentleman in a meeting who lost his liver to alcoholism. He was lucky he got a new one, but he destroyed his liver, which is a physical illness, but really, he had a spiritual illness. His liver disease was really a spiritual illness, and he needed a spiritual cure. Another interpretation of tsaras from the commentary that it says, you know, in Leviticus 13:3, it says, it is a tsaras affliction, the priest shall declare him contaminated. Is it tsaras was a divine punishment for failure to feel the needs of others? So really another way of saying selfishness, self-seeking. When Israelites in the desert were unable to feel what when others were hurt, they came down with tsaras. This may seem unfair in a way, but it's also a good thing. And this is true in recovery. When we are insensitive to the needs of others, we harm ourselves. Think about that for a second. With tsaras, the harm was made visible in the form of physical illness. This is almost like helpful. It's like, oh, you can see my skin is diseased. It's a way to say you're doing something wrong. Because this is the problem we have when we're acting out in addictions. Like, we're like, hey, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. Here, at least you go, oh, your skin's turning white. And that's because it's God's way of telling you that you're doing something wrong. And now if we act out like that, it's invisible to us. So this is the lesson of Leviticus 13:3. By self-seeking, we actually can hurt ourselves as well as hurting other people. And there is a solution to this problem, which is to find fellowship and work with other people and try and understand what other people are going through. That will help you cure the spiritual malady of self-seeking. Leviticus 13:45 continues with tsaras, saying, and the person with tsaras in whom there is the affliction, his garments shall be rent, the hair of his head shall be unshorn, and he shall cloak himself up to his lips. He is to call out, contaminated, contaminated. He shall dwell in isolation outside the camp. This is quite an image. The afflicted person has to tear his clothes, not cut his hair, and cloak himself, wrap himself up in cloth, and walk around saying, contaminated, contaminated, so people will be aware that he has the disease. Now, this verse has a number of contradictions in it. For one thing, tsaras is not communicable. It's not a contagious disease. So why does the sufferer need to be isolated and warn people that he is approaching? So one idea is that the spiritual contamination that afflicts him may affect others. I think that's believable. And being around spiritually diseased people can have a negative impact on our own sobriety and peace of mind. I mean, that's definitely something we've seen in our lives. Another view is that the person with tsaras is telling people how much pain he's in so that others will pray for him. Okay, that's an interesting idea. Saying, I'm contaminated, help me. But a third interpretation, this is a good example of how a single verse can have multiple interpretations. Third interpretation is that the person with tsaras is actually saying, you are all contaminated. That it's sort of he's not saying that he's contaminated, he's saying you're contaminated. And this is such an amazing reflection on the way addiction can work. He's contaminated, so he assumes everyone else is as well. You know, and this is, if you look at the rationalizations that people used when they're using, it's a lot of the time it's like this. It's like, oh, you know, everybody uses drugs, everyone's on something, everyone's stoned. I use heroin and you use coffee, you know. So we're both addicts, wink, wink, right? It's a way you can bring everybody in the world down to your level to justify your behavior. And another way to look at this too, just extending it to one more interpretation, is the sufferer is in isolation. And he's isolated even while he's with other people. And this is a very common theme in recovery and addiction. You're alone while you're with other people. But you don't have to be. And that this is a reminder that if you can treat your spiritual malady, maybe you can be with other people and they won't view you as contaminated. You won't view yourself as contaminated. And you can become better.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com